This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Trans communities across the country have increasingly come under attack. Families have had to uproot, sometimes in a matter of days, to escape state policies banning care for transgender youth. Take Kimberly Shapley, the mother of young trans activist Kai Shapley. Her family moved out of Texas last year after years of fighting anti-trans proposals there, as she recounted in speaking with Vice News.
We need one of the states that actually has policies, laws in place saying that they won't extradite parents of trans kids. When states like Texas come after us, even after we've moved.
Illinois recently became one of those states. A new law in Illinois provides protections for people who provide or receive gender-affirming care. It also shields information about gender-affirming care from court orders outside of Illinois. That's become more significant as many of the states around Illinois have enacted bans on gender-affirming care for trans youth in recent weeks. Other changes in Illinois now require state-regulated health insurance plans to cover gender-affirming hormones without copays. And another law signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker changes the system for changing names in Illinois. Among other things, it lifts the restrictions on people who've been convicted of felonies from name changes, which groups like the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois say have disproportionately affected marginalized people, including those who are transgender. For the rest of the program today, we're going to listen back to a February conversation about how laws in Illinois and across the country are affecting people who are transgender. Because our program's on tape, we're not taking calls, but as ever, let us know what you thought anytime, day or night, by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is our conversation on transgender laws and transgender life in Illinois. Raina Ortiz is Program Director of Task Force Prevention and Community Services, which is an organization that serves LGBTQ youth on the west side of Chicago. Raina, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Alana Banks, a queer activist and member of the Decatur School Board. She's thought to be the first Black transgender woman elected to a school board in the United States. Alana, welcome back to the 21st Show to you.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Also with us is the CEO of the LGBTQ advocacy group Equality Illinois, Brian Johnson. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And last, certainly not least, we wanted to look at the national landscape and talk about some of the proposals, good and bad, coming from state legislatures across the country. And for that, we're joined by Orion Rumbler. He's an LGBTQ plus reporter for The 19th, which is a nonprofit news site that focuses on gender, politics, and policy. Orion, thanks for making the time to be with us today.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Raina, I want to begin with you. You've been out as a trans woman for almost three decades now. Talk about how you've seen the trans community in Illinois grow and evolve in that time.
Yeah, so yesterday was a special day for me. I turned 43 years old. And
happy birthday.
Thank you so much. And it really is. My mom says I came out when I was 8 years old in 88, but like physically expressing to my family, well, I was around 13 years old when I came out to my family. So this is three decades of me living as Raina. And luckily for myself, I've had a very supportive family, which really kept me safe from, you know, society and my community, you know. So how I see things differently is, well, when I came out as, you know, I didn't even know the term trans, you know, there was no internet, there was not a lot of like support verbiage, you know. I just knew, and how I expressed was like, I'm not just a boy, you know. And luckily for me, like, not only having my family, but culturally, you know, we're Indigenous people, so we understood, you know, prior to colonization of this land, that Native Americans had multiple genders. So, you know, that's what really kept me from, you know, being exiled out of my family at a young age. But my community, it was a different story. You know, I grew up in Chicago, through Pilsen, through Cicero and Little Village, and the community around was very judgmental, very brutal, non-supportive, you know, teachers. I mean, just anywhere that I went, as people recognized that I was this feminine, androgynous child, you know, it was very looked down upon. and they caused a lot of, you know, physical violence and discriminatory places that I couldn't go to, and people making me feel like an outsider, you know. So now 30 years later, as an activist, you know, and an advocate fighting for the rights of transgender people, I've seen just a huge amount of progress. You know, we're not where we're supposed to be. You know, it should be better by, you know, 2023, but we're not where we were either, where it was very taboo. No one was really talking about it publicly. You know, politicians were not, you know, trying to support you. You know, so I really see a large amount of progress in the battle of, like, you know, just safety for trans people.
Alana Banks, what about you? How are things for you now, living as a trans woman in Central Illinois?
First off, happy birthday, Raina.
Thank you.
Things for me, you know, I always tell people, because I get this question a lot, you know, I would have to agree with Raina. Things have improved tremendously, but we still have much more to go. I am a person who will, like, recognize my privilege. I am a Black trans woman, but I have many privileges that other trans people of color do not have. So I'm continuously checking myself on that privilege daily, almost. Living in Central Illinois, it's kind of the same situation for the rest of Illinois. I come from Decatur. It's a small area. We're in Central Illinois, and typically here, our experiences are, you know, this is a small town. We don't have a place for that here. This is a small town. Do we have any queer people here anyway? Is a lot of things that I hear. We don't have queer people here. We don't have trans people here. You know, if that's something that you're interested in, you'd have to go up to Chicago. So, you know, we hear, you know, different things like that all the time. The social landscape, I will say, has improved, especially for those of us coming from places that are not Chicago, that are not Northern Illinois. It could be a bit more brutal here. As you've seen in the news, you know, we're battling, you know, not only, you know, laws for trans folks, you know, we're also battling reproductive laws, we're battling laws and policies that have to do with, excuse me, critical race theory. And so, you know, all of these things are kind of happening for me at once. And I'm just navigating in a way that kind of champions the movement for all of us here. But on a more personal level, things for me have improved tremendously. My family has also been very supportive. I do say that, you know, my community is actually more supportive of me in recent years. And I really think that success is the driver of that. I don't feel, when I was a candidate for school board, you know, there wasn't a lot of support for me. I wasn't sure how the election was going to turn out. but since then, I think it's taken, you know, having a trans person like myself, a Black trans person at that, in roles in the community that are seen as roles that could be completed with dignity. Let's just say, you know, to see a Black trans person in a higher role, that has helped the image of trans people in our community. But like I said, just as Raina stated earlier, you know, we still have a far way to go.
Yeah. Orion Rumler with the 19th News, I want to bring you in now. Can you give us a bird's eye view of some of the various types of legislation across the country that are restricting the rights of trans people, especially trans youth?
Sure thing. Thank you so much, Brian, and happy birthday, Raina. So this year, 2023, so far we're seeing about 340 anti-LGBTQ bills across the country. That's for the Human Rights Campaign count. The exact count is going to be different depending on what advocacy group you're going to for that. We're seeing less anti-trans sports bills than last year, and that's a bill usually targeted at trans girls that says we do not want trans students to be playing on sports teams in schools that matches their gender identity. There's less of those bills. This year we're seeing more bills, over 90 bills targeted at gender-affirming care for trans youth. And what that means is puberty blockers and hormone therapies. If you're familiar with these bills, or if you're more in the weeds about it, you'll know that a lot of these lawmakers talk about surgeries when they talk about banning gender-affirming care for trans youth. So when they talk about these surgeries, it can be misleading if you don't know the details of what this care means. So I have to talk more about that. We're also seeing more bathroom bills this year, which is a resurgence that goes a little bit further back into like 2016, 2017. And we're also seeing overall more gender-affirming care bans are going into effect or getting farther now than they did in previous years, like we've seen in Utah, that went into effect in South Dakota. Although in Utah, there is a lawsuit been promised for that one. And so as more of these bills go into effect, we're waiting to see who or where lawsuits are promised by the ACLU Land Illegal and other advocacy groups. So that's, I think, roughly the bird's eye view right now.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack, and we can get into there if we have time. I mean, some things you mentioned, you know, the idea that these sports bills tend to not even really acknowledge the existence of trans men, that could be its own conversation, to some of these confusion about the medical, you know, what treatment actually means. But I want to bring Brian Johnson into the conversation now. And can you talk about what is your best understanding of what's motivating these bills? I mean, this is something that seems to have really popped into the news more or into legislatures more in the last few years.
There's a lot of conflicting reasons why people are advancing such bills. I think the worst of it is we are seeing national leaders and leaders in states throughout the country that are willing to target, in many places, the most marginalized and attacked members of the LGBTQ plus community for their own political benefit. We come across, and I see leaders like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I have no evidence to suggest that he has been animated by anti-trans and anti-queer ideology for most of his life. I think he's made a quick calculus that has said, if I attack trans people, if I attack queer youth, I can rise in my party's esteem and maybe make a bigger political career out of it.
You know, Alana, I want to ask you, in a position on a school board, there are people out there, I imagine some of them are listening to us right now, and I'm sure you've heard this as a school board member. Oh, this is just about boys who want to sneak into the girls' locker room. Can you talk about, you know, that attitude that you do that is out there in the country?
Yeah, and I think it's quite foolish, to say the least. You know, just as you mentioned earlier with the erasure basically of trans men, you know, that just completely forgetting about the other side and the various other sides of the equation here. We do hear a lot about that. I spoke with a high school classroom a couple of weeks ago in our district, and one of the students asked me, you know, how do I feel about the whole bathroom situation as it's becoming a topic again? And, you know, our district has, you know, pledged that, you know, we do have protections and policies put in place to protect our students. But we're noticing that time and time again, these are messages that we're getting from parents of students, families of students who are not okay with this. There generally is no issue on the social level with the kids and the classrooms. And that's kind of something that surprised me. I kind of feel like, you know, this generation of students, they're more intuitive, they're more empathetic. But a lot of this is definitely because of the national steam against the queer movement, if you ask me. We're doing all we can in Decatur Public Schools to protect our students, but it's definitely an uphill battle for sure.
Ryan, you reported on a poll that came out last month. It found all of these proposals placing restrictions or on LGBTQ youth, especially trans youth, in one form or another, are detrimental to their mental health. Earlier in the show, we heard from Illinois State Representative Kelly Cassidy mentioning what she called outrageous spikes in suicide rates among trans people, trans youth specifically. Ryan, what else do we know about the effect these bills are having on the people who are being targeted?
Thank you so much. And yeah, the Morning Consult and Trevor Project poll is a great resource for folks who want the national perspective. And what I can say as to from what I've seen so far this year in Utah, which is the first state to sign to enact a gender-affirming care ban into law, I spoke with a mental health therapist in Utah who said that six of her transgender teen clients said they experienced suicidal ideation caused by the state moving forward with the bill. And that's regardless of whether those kids actually wanted the medical care, they just feel attacked from it. So that's one of the direct examples I've seen in my reporting so far this year. But as you saw in that you know, the Trevor Project poll, when it takes a national view, they find that LGBTQ youth, they just find that debates around the state laws affects their mental health, which, you know, if you break it down a little bit, it's a debate about, you know, if you're a kid and you're watching it, you're watching adults debate about, can I be in school sports? Like, can I use the bathroom? That can obviously might affect a kid's self-esteem or affect how they think about themselves and their identity. And that's where a lot of activists are concerned about, regardless of whether a bill actually passes, they still worry about the process when it's being debated and how it affects mental health.
Raina, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but Illinois is obviously not going in this direction with its laws. It's going in the other direction. But do you see these proposals having that effect here, affecting, you know, people seeing what's happening elsewhere in the country, really, I guess, questioning their right to exist?
Well, I run a youth space. I've been running a youth space, an LGBT youth space, centering trans youth of color for 9 years. You know, I see my youth as ferocious, and they advocate for themselves and they're powerful and all these things, you know, but are they impacted by the way they feel the government or people in government see them? Of course. And it's important for us as advocates and leaders to understand what's going on and be able to give them that information in a way that is, you know, productive, and they understand that there are people fighting for them and their right to exist in this country as well.
We're going to pause here for just a moment. We're listening back to a February conversation about the state of laws around trans people, and especially trans youth, not just in Illinois, but also around the country. The number of anti-LGBTQ bills has climbed even higher since we originally had this conversation. Several states around Illinois have banned gender-affirming care for trans youth. We talked about this with Raina Ortiz, Program Director of Task Force Prevention and Community Services, Alana Banks, a member of the Decatur School Board, Brian Johnson, CEO of Equality Illinois, and Orion Rumler, the LGBTQ plus reporter at the news site The 19th. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to the last part of our February conversation on the program about the state of laws around transgender individuals here in Illinois and how that relates to what's happening in the rest of the country. Illinois has recently enacted protections for people who receive or provide gender-affirming care. We're seeing a lot of states, including those around Illinois, go the other way, trying to make it harder to get that care. Even outside of healthcare, there's plenty of other legislation targeting transgender people. We talked about all this with Raina Ortiz, who's program director of an organization that serves LGBTQ youth on the west side of Chicago, Alana Banks, a member of the Decatur School Board, Brian Johnson, CEO of the LGBTQ advocacy group Equality Illinois, and Orion Rumler, who's a reporter at the news site The 19th. As a reminder, since we're listening back to a conversation we first broadcast in February, we're not taking calls live, but we still want to hear what you think, so send an email to talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is the rest of our conversation on trans life and trans laws. So let's talk about some of these laws. One of the new laws in Illinois, as I mentioned, is shields people who provide or receive gender-affirming care. There were a fair number of stories last year about families with trans children, like the Shapleys. We heard an audio clip from them earlier in the program, fleeing Texas as Governor Greg Abbott declared that gender-affirming care was child abuse. Orion, are we seeing more families from other states taking similar approaches?
Thank you so much, Brian. You mean more families leaving their state?
Leaving their state, seeking a more, you know, a more friendly, welcoming state.
Yes. I do have to say, at least for me, this has been a little hard to measure in reporting, because when I talk with families about this, at least when I was talking with families in Texas about this, and some of them were considering this in 2021 when the Texas state legislature was back in session. It's back in session again this year. But And then I also had conversations like this with a family in Arkansas back in 2020, I think. And that's to say a lot of families have been in that position for a while now. And it's not an easy decision for a lot of them to make. Like, I've spoken with a family in Arkansas, the Dylan Brandt and his mom, who are at the center of the lawsuit in Arkansas, and they're not planning to move right now. But when they saw the Arkansas bathroom bill, the state's considering a bathroom bill again, they're not planning to move. But then they see the bathroom bill come back into the state house, and Joanna found herself Googling apartments to look at, found herself thinking about moving again. But it's not an easy decision because she's the sole parent, the only caregiver. They have to think about moving costs. So yes, more families are thinking about this, but right now, to me, it's not clear how many are actually financially in the position to be able to move. I think it really depends on their situation, and it's something I want to keep reporting on to find out how many are able to do that.
Brian Johnson, what about you with this? I mean, we often hear the conversation around state government in Illinois is that people are leaving because of tax policy or this, that, or the other thing. Do you hear of people coming to Illinois because of its policies with regard to LGBTQ communities, and particularly trans youth?
I do, and I think, like Orion, I don't have good tools of which to measure that currently. What we are hearing is advocates in other states talking to us to make sure they're clear about what our laws and protections are so that they can advise the families and young people they're working with about seeking care in Illinois. You know, we anecdotally hear from providers of gender-affirming care, particularly downstate, and how they are seeing an uptick in families coming here. I mean, we are, in many ways, not just for gender-affirming care, but for reproductive freedom as well, a kind of blue oasis in a sea of red when it comes to being able to provide legal and appropriate health care to our residents and our visitors.
Raina, I want to ask you about that another law in Illinois that recently was signed. That's the one that allows name changes. I mentioned this at the beginning of the segment. It's changes to the system for requesting a name change. That's a lot of the use of the word change in one sentence there. But can you talk more about the significance of some of the restrictions that were lifted with that law?
Yeah, sure. So Illinois, even though it is a progressive state, there are still old laws on the books that were really kind of detrimental to the progress of trans community. And so HB 2542 was an amendment to a law that was on the books where if you were convicted of a felony, any felony, you had to wait 10 years to change your name after you've done your probation and all those things, which could be like 14 years to change your name. But there were some felonies that were completely banned. So if you had fraud, forgery, or identity theft, you were completely banned from changing your name at all in the state of Illinois. And, before all this, like, protection for trans people, a large portion of our community were, you know, sex workers or still are sex workers and doing other things to, you know, generate income for surgeries. So if they committed fraud 30 years ago or 25 years ago, they were banned indefinitely for changing their name in the state of Illinois. That means they had to walk around with an ID that didn't match their gender identity. And that causes a lot of discrimination to identify as a woman and then to pull your ID out and your ID still says like a man's name or a masculine name. You know, it caused a lot of discomfort.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Alana, let me bring you back into the conversation, because another part of this, the big law, not the name change one, but the bigger law that passed earlier this year, it was around abortion and gender-affirming health care in Illinois. Part of that was a requirement for state-regulated health insurance to cover gender-affirming hormones without copays. But I think it's important to note that gender-affirming health care, it's not just medications, right? There are a lot of other costs that go into it, doctor's visits, blood tests, other supplies, the list goes on. Those costs add up. I understand, Alana, you've got some experience both as someone getting that care and helping other people get that care. Can you talk more about that?
Sure, yes. So my initial dive into healthcare was I was a pharmacy technician for Walgreens. but then I soon I left Walgreens and went to Plume. Plume is a, they basically help, they offer trans-affirming healthcare anywhere in the United States that allows folks to receive those types of medications. And so I was a patient care coordinator for a while through Plume. And so there I was answering questions and having to be update with the laws, constantly on the phone with health insurance companies trying to determine whether or not we can help certain individuals with their care. It's been, well, I guess I could start from, so on my end, I was not always, before having joining Plume, I was the type of person who, and there are still many of us, who just felt simply uncomfortable going to a doctor's office. And as you mentioned, you know, it's more than just, you know, the medications. This is even with going into a therapist's office, you know. So when you're in the process of changing your name, when you're trying to obtain hormones for the first time, you have to go through the mental health assessment first. And, you know, even that can be troubling. Specifically for those of us, I'll reiterate, those of us who are in Central and Southern Illinois, and, you know, thankfully in Central Illinois, we have Planned Parenthood and the Phoenix Center of Springfield, who offers, you know, services directly to Decatur. But it's been quite troublesome with the amount of trauma that folks have to go through in order to receive the care that they need.
Yeah, and I can imagine. Well, Raina, let me ask you about this, because I think one of the other things, I mentioned some of the ideas that people have out there that are misconceptions. Can you talk about why it might be better or safer, if it is, to begin gender-affirming care at a younger age? Because, I mean, I'm sure there are people listening who think this is such a major life decision, and we've seen laws in other states. One proposal in Oklahoma had, at one point, said age 26, that was changed to age 18. But what do you say to that? Why might it be better to begin this at a younger age?
So I think one of the issues that people in this country have, that they think that trans-affirming care is, you know, all about medical. You know, mostly what a trans youth is, what they need is support. You know, they need to feel supported. They need to be supported. And not all trans people are affirmed by their families. A lot of times their families are their first kind of like violence and discriminatory, you know, feelings is their family. And that's just coming out as a trans person. I think a big misconception that this country has that it's all about medical. Like if someone, you know, I was 13 when I came out, I just needed my mother and my father to love me and support me, because society was going to be very cruel to me. It wasn't about hormone therapy. It wasn't about, you know, like physically transitioning. That came later. I just needed support. And I think that's what we've lost, that kind of conversation when it comes to supporting trans youth. It's not so much medical. It's about the support that they're getting from their families, from their community, from their schools. And then as they age and as they grow older, like, okay, is it helpful for a trans youth to get on testosterone blockers, a trans femme person, or hormone blockers to block, you know, when they're going through puberty? Because it helps them down the line. You know, that's a conversation, you know, between the family, the parents, and the doctors, you know. But I think first and foremost, we have to be comfortable with supporting our youth in general. You know, it's not so much about medical transition. It's really about, you know, giving them support.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Ryan, I do want to ask you, we've talked a lot about some of the negative proposals around the country that would adversely affect trans communities and individuals. We've talked about some of the laws in Illinois that aim to make a positive difference with that. Is there any other sign of optimism around the country? What are you seeing in your reporting?
Yeah, so there are some bills coming out to ban conversion therapy, which is one good sign. And I will say, as well, in Illinois, and I apologize if you already mentioned this, but there's also a bill in Illinois that would require teachers to teach respect towards a person's race or gender ethnicity, and another that would require LGBTQ inclusivity training as part of professional development leadership. And the conversion therapy bans are another good sign that I'd point to nationally. as well. And if there are some good resources for, if folks want to look into more, like a good national tracker to look at is Equality Federation, and the ACLU has a pretty good bill tracker too, if folks are curious.
And Raina, is there anything else you would like to see in terms of legislation in Illinois that, that would help the transgender community?
Education. We need better education in schools and through the school systems. It starts there. You know, when we have, you know, bad education or education that doesn't want to talk about these issues, it only makes things worse.
And Brian Johnson, what about you, CEO of Equality Illinois?
You know, a couple other bills here. A bill that would require all medical providers who are seeking to renew their licenses to get cultural competency education. This is not just trans or queer affirming cultural competency, but also would include cultural competency around race and ethnicity and immigration status. We think that bill is important. And another bill that would allow any business that wants to create gender neutral, multiple occupancy restrooms. That's another bill we think is really important.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. Well, I want to thank our guests so much for being with us today. Raina Ortiz is with Task Force Prevention and Community Services, which is a group that provides services to LGBTQ youth in Chicago. Alana Banks is a member of the Decatur School Board. Brian Johnson, CEO of Equality Illinois. And Orion Rumler is a reporter with the 19th news site. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st show. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your personal stories as well.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you so much.
And that's all of our time for today and for this week. But before we go, we'd love to hear what you think about what we've been talking about today or any show of ours. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, if you think we got something right or something wrong, let us know. You can leave a voicemail anytime at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. We'll be sharing some of your responses on air from time to time. You can also find that number and our email address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. You can also find our past segments there, as well as links to our podcast, or look us up on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast app. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again next week.